At 12, a coterie of tin pots descend in grav boots from the pot. Their armour is shoddy and stained. Most are boys or old men retired from Earth's wars. But that's not what matters. They carry their thumpers and scorchers in buckled holsters. I've never seen either weapon used. There's no need. They've got the air, the food, the port. We haven't a scorcher to shoot. Not that Io wouldn't like to steal one. The muscle in her jaw flexes as she watches the tin pots float in their grav boots, now joined by Mine Magistrate Timonisu Paginus, a minute copper-haired man of the pennies. Copper, to be technic.
Notice, notice! Grabby rosters!
Ugly Dan calls. Silence falls over the festivities as they float above us. Magistrate Paginus's grav boots are substandard things, so he wobbles in the air like a geriatric. More tin pots descend on a grav lift as Paginus splays open his small, manicured hands.
Fellow pioneers, how wonderful it is to see your celebrations. I must confess, he titters, I have a fondness for the rustic nature of your happiness. Simple drink, simple fare, simple dance. Oh, what fine souls you have to be so entertained. Why, I wish I were so entertained. I cannot even find pleasure off-planet in a pink brothel after a meal of fine ham and pineapple tart these days. How sad for me. How your souls are spoiled. If only I could be like you. But my colour is my colour, and I am cursed as a copper to live a tedious life of data, bureaucracy, and management.
He clucks his tongue, and his copper curls bounce as his grav boots shift.
But to the matter. All quotas have been met, save by Mu and Kai. As such, they will receive no beefs, milks, spices, hygienics, comforts, or dental aid this month. Oats and substantials only. You understand that the ships from Earth orbit can only bring so many supplies to the colonies. Valuable resources. We must give them to those who perform. Perhaps next quarter, Mu and Kai, you will dally less.
Mu and Kai lost a dozen men in a gas explosion like the one Uncle Nerol feared. They did not dally. They died. He prattles on a while before coming to the real matter. He produces the laurel and holds it in the air, pinched between his fingers. It's painted in fake gold, but the small branch sparkles nonetheless. Lauren nudges me. Uncle Nerol scowls. I lean back, conscious of the eyes. The young take their cues from me. The children adore all Helldivers, but the older eyes watch me too, just as Io always says. I'm their pride, their golden son. Now I'll show them how a real man acts. I won't jump up and down in victory. I'll just smile and nod.
And it becomes my distinct honour to, on behalf of the Art Governor of Mars, Nero our Augustus, to award the laurel of productivity and monthly excellence and triumphant fortitude and obedience, sacrifice and...
Gamma gets the laurel. And we don't. Chapter 4. The Gift. As the laurel-wreathed boxes come down to Gamma, I think about how clever it really is. They won't let us win the laurel. They don't care that the math doesn't work. They don't care that the young scream in protest and the old moan their same tired wisdoms. This is just a demonstration of their power. It is their power. They decide the winner. A game of merit, won by birth. It keeps the hierarchy in place. It keeps us striving, but never conspiring. Yet, despite the disappointment, some part of us doesn't blame the society. We blame Gamma, who receives the gift. A man's only got so much hate, I suppose. And when he sees his children's ribs through their shirts, while his neighbours line their bellies with meat stews and sugared tarts. It's hard for him to hate anyone but them. You think they'd share? They don't. My uncle shrugs at me, and others are red and mad. Lauren looks like he might attack the tin pots or the gammas. But Io doesn't let me boil in it. She doesn't let my knuckles turn white as I clench my fists in fury. She knows the temper I have inside me better than my own mother, and she knows how to drain the rage before it rises. My mother smiles softly as she watches Io take me by the arm. How she loves my wife.
"Dance with me," Io whispers.
She shouts for the zithers to get going and the drums to get rolling. No doubt she's pissing fire. She hates the society more than I do, but this is why I love my wife. Soon the fast zither music swells, and the old men slap their hands on tables. The layered skirts fly, feet tap and shuffle. And I grasp my wife as the clans flow in dance throughout the square to join us. We sweat and we laugh and try to forget the anger. We grew together and are now grown. In her eyes, I see my heart. In her breath, I hear my soul. She is my land. She is my kin. My love. She pulls me away with laughter. We wend our way through the crowd to be alone. Yet she does not stop when we are free. She guides me along metal walkways and low, dark ceilings to old tunnels, to the webbery, where the women toil. It is between shifts.
"Where are we going, exactly?" I ask.
"If you remember, I have gifts for you. And if you apologize for your own gift going flat, I'll smack you in the gob."
Seeing a bloody red hemanthus bulb peeking out from the wall, I snatch it up and hand it to her.
"My gift," I say.
"I did intend to surprise you." She giggles.
"Well then,
this inner half is mine. This outer half is yours."
"No, don't pull at it. I'm keeping your half."
I smell the hemanthus in her hand. It stinks like rust and mother's meager stews. Inside the webbery, thigh-thick spider worms of brown and black fur with long skeletal legs knit silk around us. They crawl along the girders, thin legs disproportionate to their corpulent abdomens. Io leads me to the webbery's highest level. The old metal girders are laced with silk. I shiver in looking at the creatures above and below. Pit vipers, I understand. Spider worms, I do not. The society's carvers made the creatures. Laughing, Io guides me to a wall and pulls back a thick curtain of webbing, revealing a rusted metal duct.
"Ventilation," she says. "Mortar on the walls gave way to reveal it about a week ago. An old tube, too."
"Io, they'll lash us if they find us. We're not allowed. I'm not going to let them ruin this gift, too." She kisses me on the nose.
"Come on, Helldiver. There's not even a molten drill in this tunnel."
I follow her through a long series of turns in the small shaft, till we exit out a grate into a world of inhuman sounds. A buzz murmurs in the darkness. She takes my hand. It's the only familiar thing.
"What is that?"
I ask of the sound.
"Animals," she says, and leads me into the strange night.
Something soft is beneath my feet. I nervously let her pull me forward.
"Grass, trees, darrow trees. We're in a forest. The scent of flowers. Then lights in the darkness. Flickering animals with green abdomens flutter through the black. Great bugs with iridescent wings rise from the shadows. They pulse with color and life.
My breath catches, and Io laughs as a butterfly passes so close I can touch it.
They're in our songs, all these things. But we've only ever seen them on the HC. Their colours are unlike any I could believe. My eyes have seen nothing but soil, the flare of the drills, reds, and the grey of concrete and metal. The HC has been my window through which I've seen colour. But this is a different spectacle. The colours of the floating animals scald my eyes. I shiver and laugh and reach out and touch the creatures floating before me in the darkness. A child again, I cup them and look up at the room's clear ceiling. It is a transparent bubble that peers at the sky. Sky. Once it was just a word. I cannot see Mars's face, but I can see its view. Stars glow soft and graceful in the slick, black sky, like the lights that dangle above our township. Io looks as though she could join them. Her face is aglow as she watches me, laughing as I fall to my knees and suck in the scent of the grass. It is a strange smell, sweet and nostalgic, though I have no memories of grass. As the animals buzz near the brush, in the trees, I pull her down. I kiss her with my eyes open for the first time. The trees and their leaves sway gently from the air that comes through the vents, and I drink the sounds, the smells, the sight as my wife and I make love in a bed of grass beneath a roof of stars. That is Andromeda Galaxy, she tells me later as we lie on our backs. The animals make chirping noises in the darkness. The sky above me is a frightening thing. If I stare too intently, I forget gravity's pull and feel as though I'm going to fall into it. Shivers trickle down my spine. I am a creature of nooks and tunnels and shafts. The mine is my home, and part of me wants to run to safety, run from this alien room of living things and vast spaces. Io rolls to look at me, and traces the steam scars that run like rivers down my chest. Farther down, she'd find scars from the pit viper along my belly. Mum used to tell me stories of Andromeda. She'd draw with inks given to her by that tin pot, Bridge. He always liked her, you know. As we lie together, she takes a deep breath, and I know she has planned something, saved something to talk about in this moment. This place is leverage. You won the laurel. We all know, she says to me. You needn't coddle me. I'm not angry any longer. It doesn't matter, I say. After seeing this, none of that matters. What are you talking about? She asks sharply. It matters more than ever. You won the laurel, but they didn't let you keep it. It doesn't matter. This place exists, but they don't let us come here, Darrow. The Greys must use it for themselves. They don't share. Why should they? I ask, confused. Because we made it. Because it's ours. Is it? The thought is foreign. All I possess is my family and myself. Everything else is the society's. We didn't spend the money to send the pioneers here. Without them, we'd be on the dying earth, like the rest of humanity. Darrow, are you so red that you don't see what they've done to us? Watch your tone, I say tightly. Her jaw flexes. I'm sorry. It's just... we are in chains, Darrow. We are not colonists. Well... sure, we are, but it's more on the spot to call us slaves. We beg for food, beg for laurels like dogs begging for scraps from the master's table. You may be a slave, I snap, but I am not. I don't beg. I earn. I am a hell diver. I was born to sacrifice, to make Mars ready for man. There's a nobility to obedience. She throws up her hands. A talking puppet, are you? Spitting out their bloody damn lines. Your father had the right of it. He might not have been perfect, but he had the right of it.
She grabs a clump of grass and tears it out of the ground. It seems like some sort of sacrilege.
We have a claim over this land, Darrow. Our sweat and blood watered this soil, yet it belongs to the Golds, to the society. How long has it been this way? 100? 150 years of pioneers mining and dying? Our blood and their orders. We prepared this land for colours that have never shed sweat for us, colours that sit in comfort on their thrones on distant earth, colours that have never been to Mars.
Is that something to live for?
I'll say it again. Your father had the right of it.
I shake my head at her.
Eo, my father died before he was even 25 because he had the right of it.
Your father was weak, she mutters.
What the bloody damn is that supposed to mean?
Blood rises into my face.
It means he had too much restraint. It means your father had the right dream but died because he would not fight to make it real,
she says sharply.
He had a family to protect. He was still weaker than you.
Careful, I hiss.
Careful? This from Darrow, the mad hell diver of Lycos.
She laughs patronizingly.
Your father was born careful, obedient.
But were you?
I didn't think so when I married you.
The others say you are like a machine because they think you know no fear.
They're blind. They don't see how fear binds you.
She traces the hemanthus blossom along my collarbone in a sudden show of tenderness. She is a creature of moods. The flower is the same colour as the wedding band on her finger. I roll on an elbow to face her.
Spit it out.
What do you want?
Do you know why I love you, Helldiver? She asks.
Because of my sense of humour. She laughs dryly.
Because you thought you could win the laurel.
Kieran told me how you burned yourself today.
I sigh.
The rat. Always jabbering. Thought that's what younger brothers were supposed to do, not elder.
Kieran was frightened, Darrow. Not for you, like you might be thinking. He was frightened of you, because he can't do what you did.
Boy wouldn't even think it. She always talks circles around me. I hate the abstracts she lives for.
So, you love me because you believe that I think there are things worth the risk?
I puzzle out.
Or because I'm ambitious?
Because you've a brain, she teases. She makes me ask it again.
What do you want me to do, Eo?
Act. I want you to use your gifts for your father's dream.
You see how people watch you, take their cues from you. I want you to think owning this land, our land, is worth the risk.
How much a risk?
Your life. My life.
I scoff.
You're that eager to be rid of me.
Speak and they will listen, she urges.
It is that bloody simple. All ears yearn for a voice to lead them through darkness.
Grand. So I'll hang with a troop. I am my father's son.
You won't hang.
I laugh too harshly.
So certain a wife I have.
I'll hang.
You're not meant to be a martyr.
Sighing, she lies back in disappointment. You wouldn't see the point to it.
Oh? Well then tell me, Eo, what is the point to dying? I'm only a martyr, son, so tell me what that man accomplished by robbing me of a father. Tell me what good comes of all that bloody damn sadness. Tell me why it's better I learned to dance from my uncle than my father.
I go on.
Did his death put food on your table? Did it make any of our lives any better? Dying for a cause doesn't do a bloody damn thing. It just robbed us of his laughter. I feel the tears burning my eyes.
It just stole away a father and a husband. So what if life isn't fair? If we have family, that is all that should matter.
She licks her lips and takes her time in replying.
Death isn't empty like you say it is. Emptiness is life without freedom, Darrow. Emptiness is living chained by fear, fear of loss, of death.
I say we break those chains. Break the chains of fear, and you break the chains that bind us to the goals, to the society.
Could you imagine it? Mars could be ours.
It could belong to the colonists who slaved here, died here.
Her face is easier to see as night fades through the clear roof.
It is alive, on fire.
If you led the others to freedom, the things you could do, Darrow, the things you could make happen.
She pauses, and I see her eyes are glistening.
It chills me. You have been given so, so much, but you set your sights so low.
You repeat the same damn points, I say bitterly. You think a dream is worth dying for. I say it isn't. You say it's better to die on your feet. I say it's better to live on our knees.
You're not even living, she snaps. We are machine men with machine minds, machine lives, and machine hearts, I ask. That's what I am?
Darrow,
what do you live for? I ask her suddenly. Is it for me? Is it for family and love? Or is it for some dream?
It's not just some dream, Darrow. I live for the dream that my children will be born free, that they will be what they like, that they will own the lands their father gave them.
I live for you, I say sadly. She kisses my cheek.
Then you must live for more.
There's a long, terrible silence that stretches between us. She does not understand how her words wrench my heart, how she can twist me so easily. Because she does not love me like I love her. Her mind is too high, mine too low.
Am I not enough for her?
You said you had another gift for me, I say, changing the subject. She shakes her head.
Some other time. The sun rises. Watch it with me once at least.
We lie in silence and watch the light slip into the sky as though it were a tide made from fire.
It is unlike anything I could have dreamed of. I can't stop the tears that well in the corners of my eyes. As the world beyond turns to light, and the greens and browns and yellows of the trees in the room are revealed. It is beauty. It is a dream.
I am silent as we return to the grimness of the grey ducts. The tears linger in my eyes, and as the majesty of what I saw fades, I wonder what Io wants of me. Does she want me to take my sling blade and start a rebellion? I would die. My family would die. She would die. And nothing would make me risk her. She knows that. I am puzzling out what her other gift may be when we exit the ducts for the Webbery. I roll first from the duct and extend a hand back to her when I hear a voice. It is accented, oily, from earth.
Reds in our gardens, it oozes. Ain't that a thing?
Chapter 5 The First Song. Ugly Dan stands with three tin pots. Their thumpers perch crackling in their hands. Two of the men lean on the metal rails of the Webbery's girders. Behind them, the women of Mu and Upsilon
wrap silk from the worms around long silver poles. They shake their heads insistently at me, as if telling me not to be foolish. We've gone beyond the permitted zones. This will mean a flogging. But if I resist, it'll mean death. They will kill Eo, and they will kill me.
Darrow, Eo murmurs.
I set myself between Eo and the tin pots, but I don't fight. I won't let us die for a simple glimpse of the stars. I put my hands out to let them know I will surrender.
Hell divers.
Ugly Dan chuckles to the others. The toughest ant is yet but an ant. He swings his thumper into my stomach. It's like being bitten by a viper and kicked by a boot. I fall gasping, hands on the metal grate. Electricity slithers through my veins. I taste the bile rising in my throat.
Take a swing, hell diver.
Dan coos. He drops one of the thumpers in front of me.
Please, take a swing. Won't be any consequences. Just some fun between the boys. Take a piggin' swing.
To us, Darrow!
Eo shouts.
I'm not a fool.
I thrust my hands up in surrender, and Dan sighs in disappointment as he clacks the magnetic manacles around my wrists. What would Eo have had me do? She curses at them as they lock her arms together and drag us away through the webbery to the cells.
This will mean the lash.
But it will be just the lash, because I did not pick up the thumper. Because I did not listen to Eo.
It's 3 days in a cell in the pot before I see Eo again. Bridge, one of the old, kinder tin pots, takes us out together. He lets us touch. I wonder if she'll spit at me, curse me for my impotence. But she only grips my fingers and brings her lips to mine.
Darrow.
Her lips brush my ear. The breath is warm, the lips cracked and trembling. She's frail as she hugs me, a little girl, all wire wrapped in pale skin. Her knees wobble and she shudders against me. The warmth I saw in her face as we watched the sunrise has fled and left her like a faded memory. But I hardly see anything but her eyes and her hair. I wrap my arms around her and hear the muttering of the crowded common. The faces of our kin and clan stare at us as we stand at the edge of the gallows, where they will flog us. I feel like a child under their stares, under the yellowish lights. It's like a dream when Eo tells me she loves me. Her hand lingers on mine, but there's something strange to her eyes. They should only whip her, yet her words are final. Her eyes sad, but not afraid. I see her making a goodbye. A nightmare is coming into my heart. I can feel it, like a nail dragged across the bones of my spine as she murmurs an epigram in my ear.
Break the chains, my love.
And then I am jerked away from her by my hair. Tears stream down her face. They are for me, though I do not yet understand why. I cannot think. The world is swimming. I am drowning. Rough hands shove me to my knees, then jerk me up. I've never heard the common so quiet. The shuffling of my captor's feet echoes as they move me around. The tin pots fit me into my hell diver fry suit. Its acrid smell makes me think I'm safe. I am in control.
I am not.
I'm dragged away from her into the very center of the common and tossed at the edge of the gallows. The metal stairs are rusted and stained. I grip them with my hands and look to the top of the gallows. 24 of the head talks each have a cord of leather. They wait for me atop the platform.
Oh, the horror of such occasions as this, my friends!
Magistrate Paginus cries. His copper grav boots hum above me as he floats through the air.
Oh, how the ties that bind us are stretched when one decides to break the laws which protect us all. Even the youngest, even the best, are subject to law, to order. Without these, we would be animals. Without obedience, without discipline, there would be no colonies. And those few colonies there are would be torn asunder by disorder. Man would be confined to earth. Man would wallow forevermore on that planet until the end of days. But order, discipline, law, these are the things which empower our race. Cursed is the creature who breaks with these compacts.
The speech is more eloquent than usual. Virginus is trying to impress his intelligence upon someone. I look up from the stairs and see a sight I did not ever think to see with my own two eyes. It stings to look at him, to drink in the radiance of his hair, of his sigils. I see a gold. In this drab place, he is what I imagine angels would be like. Cloaked in gold and black, wrapped in the sun, a lion roaring upon his breast. His face is older, severe, and pure with power. His hair shines, combed back against his head. Neither a smile nor a frown mark his thin lips, and the only line I see is that of a scar, which runs along his right cheekbone. I've learned from the HC that such a scar is borne only by the finest of the golds. The peerless scarred, they call them. Men and women of the ruling colour who have graduated from the Institute, where they learn the secrets that will permit mankind to one day colonise all the planets of the solar system. He does not speak to us. He speaks to another gold, one tall and thin, so thin I thought it a woman at first. Without a scar, the man's face is coated with strange paste to bring out the colour of his cheeks and cover the lines on his face. His lips shine, and his hair glistens in a way his master's does not. He is a grotesque thing to look upon. He thinks so of us. He sniffs the air, contemptuous. The older gold speaks to him softly, and not to us. And why should he speak to us? We are not worthy of a gold's words. I scarcely want to look at him. I feel like I dirty his gold and black finery with my red eyes. Shame creeps upon me. And then I realize why. His is a face I know. It is a face every man and woman of the colonies would know. Besides Octavia Auloon, this is the most famous face on Mars. That of Nero Augustus. The arch-governor of Mars has come to see me flogged, and he has brought a retinue. Two crows, obsidians to be technic, float quietly behind him. Their skull helmets suit their colour. I was born to mine the earth. They were born to kill men. More than 2 feet taller than I, 8 fingers on each massive hand, they breathe them for war, and watching them is like watching the cold-blooded pit vipers who infest our mines. Reptiles, both. There are a dozen others in his retinue, including another, slighter gold who seems his apprentice. He's even more beautiful than the arch-governor, and he appears to dislike the thin, womanish gold. And there is a HC camera crew of greens. Tiny creatures, compared with the crows. Their hair is dark. Not green, like their eyes and the sigils on their hands. Frenetic excitement shimmers in those eyes. It's not often they have helldivers to make into an example, so they make a spectacle of me. I wonder how many other mining colonies are watching. All of them, if the arch-governor is here. They make a show of stripping away the fry suit they only just dressed me in. I see myself on the HC displayed above, see my wedding band dangling from the cord around my neck. I look younger than I feel. Thinner. They jerk me up the stairs and bend me over a metal box beside the noose where my father hung. I shiver as they lay me across the cold steel and tighten my hands in restraints. I smell the synth leather of the lashes, hear one of the head talks cough.
"Forevermore, let justice be done,"
Paginus says. Then the lashes come. 48 in all. They aren't soft. Not even my uncle's. They can't be. The lashes bite and wail into my flesh, making a strange keening noise as they arch through the air. Music of terror. I can barely see by the end of it. I pass out twice, and each time I wake, I wonder if you can see my spine on the HC. It's a show. All a show of their power. They let the tin pot, Ugly Dan, act sympathetic, as though he pities me. He whispers encouragement in my ear loud enough for the cameras, and when the last lash slashes my back, he steps in as if to stop another from coming down. Subconsciously, I think he saves me. I'm thankful. I want to kiss him. He is salvation. But I know I've had my 48. Then they are dragging me to the side. They leave my blood. I'm sure I screamed, sure I shamed myself. I hear them bring out my wife.
"Even the young, even the beautiful, cannot escape justice. It is for all the colours that we preserve order, justice. Without, we would find anarchy. Without obedience, chaos. Man would perish upon the irradiated sands of earth. He would drink from the blasted seas. There must be unity. Forevermore, let justice be done."
Mine Magistrate Paginus's words ring hollow. No one is offended that I'm bloody and beaten. But when Io is dragged atop the gallows, there are cries. There are curses. Even now she is beautiful, even drained of the light I saw in her 3 days ago. Even as she sees me and lets the tears come down her face, she is an angel. All this for a little adventure. All this for a night under the stars with the man she loves. Yet she is calm. If there is fear, it is in me, because I feel a strangeness in the air. Her skin prickles as they lay her across the cold box. She flinches. I wish my blood had warmed it better for her. When they whip Io, I try not to watch, but it hurts more to abandon her. Her eyes find mine. They shine like rubies, twitch every time the lash falls. "Soon this will be over, my love. Soon we will go back to life. Just last the lash and we get everything back." But can she even take so many lashes?
"End it," I say to the tin pot beside me. "End it,"
I beg of him.
"I'll do anything. I'll obey. I'll take our lashes. Just end it, you bloody damn bastards. End it."
The arch-governor looks down at me, but his face is golden, poreless, and without care. I am nothing but the bloodiest of ants. My sacrifice will impress him. He'll feel compassion if I abase myself, if I throw myself into the fire for love. He'll feel pity. This is how the stories go.
"Your Excellency, give me her punishment," I plead. "Please."
I beg because in my wife's eyes I see something that terrifies me. I see fight in her as they streak her back bloody. I see anger building inside her. There is a reason she is not afraid. No, 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 I plead to her. No, Io, please, no. Gag that wretched thing. He prickles the arch-governor's ears. Paginus orders. Bridge forces a knot of stone into my mouth. I gag and cry. As the 13th lash falls, as I mumble for her not to do it, Io stares into my eyes one last moment, and then she begins her song. It is a quiet sound, a mournful sound, like the song the deep mines whisper as wind moves in the abandoned shafts. It is the song of death and lament, the song that is forbidden. The song I have only heard once before. For this they will kill her. Her voice is soft and true, never as beautiful as she. It echoes across the common, rising up like a siren's unearthly call. The lashes pause. The head talks shiver. Even the tin pots sadly shake their heads when they place the words. Few men truly like seeing beauty burn. Paginus glances embarrassedly over at Arch-Governor Augustus, who descends on golden grav-boots to watch more closely. His shining hair glistens against his noble brow. High cheekbones catch the light. Those golden eyes examine my wife as though a worm had suddenly sprouted a butterfly's wings. His scar curves as he speaks with a voice dripping power. Let her sing, he says to Paginus, not bothering to hide his fascination.
But, my lord,
no animal but man throws themselves willingly into the flames, copper. Relish the sight. You'll not see it again. To his camera crew, continue recording. We will edit out the parts we find intolerable. How futile his words make her sacrifice seem. But never has Io been more beautiful to me than in that moment. In the face of cold power, she is fire. This is the girl who danced through the smoky Tav with a mane of red. This is the girl who wove me a wedding band of her own hair. This is the girl who chooses to die for a song of death.
My love, remember the cries when winter died for spring skies. They roared and roared, but we grabbed our seed and sowed a song against their greed. And down in the vale, hear the reaper swing, the reaper swing, the reaper swing. Down in the vale, hear the reaper sing, a tale of winter done. My son, remember the chains when gold ruled with iron reins. We roared and roared and twisted and screamed for hours a veil of better dreams.
As her voice finally swells and the song runs out of words, I know I have lost her. She becomes something more important, and she was right. I do not understand. A quaint tune, but is that all you have? The arch-governor asks her, when she is through. He looks at her, but he speaks loudly, to the crowd, to those who will watch in the other colonies. His entourage chuckles at Io's weapon. A song. What is a song but notes unto the air, useless as a match in a storm against his power? He shames us. Do any of you wish to join her in song? I implore you, bold reds of... He looks to his assistant, who mouths the name. Lycos. Join her now, if you wish. I can barely breathe past the stone. It chips my molars. Tears stream down my face. No voices rise from the crowd. I see my mother trembling with anger. Kieran clutches his wife close. Nerol stares at the ground. Lauren weeps. They are all here. All quiet. All afraid. Alas, Your Excellency, we find the girl alone in her zealotry, Paginus declares. Io has eyes only for me. 'Tis clear her opinion is an outlier's, an outcast's. Mayhaps we should proceed. Yes, the Arch-Governor says idly. I have an appointment with Arcos. Hang the rusty bitch, lest she continue to howl. Chapter 6 The Martyr. For Io, I do not react. I am anger. I am hatred. Everything. But I hold her gaze, even as they take her away and fit the noose around her neck. I look up at Bridge, and he quietly takes the gag from my mouth. My teeth will never be the same. Tears build in the tin pot's eyes. I leave him and stumble numbly to the bottom of the scaffold so Io can see me as she dies. This is her choice. I will be with her to the end. My hands shake. Sobs come from the crowd behind me. The last words, to whom will you speak them before justice is done? Paginus asks her. He drips sympathy for the camera. I ready for her to say my name. But she does not. Her eyes never leave mine. But she calls her sister out. Dio! The word trembles in the air. She is frightened now. I do not react as Dio climbs the scaffold stairs. I do not understand, but I will not be jealous. This is not about me. I love her. And her choice is made. I do not understand, but I will not let her die knowing anything but my love. Ugly Dan has to help Dio climb the gallows. She's stumbling and senseless as she leans close to her sister. Whatever is said, I do not hear. But Dio lets loose a moan that will haunt me forever. She looks at me as she weeps. What did my wife tell her? Women are crying. Men wipe their eyes. They have to stun Dio to pull her away, but she clings to Io's feet, weeping. There is a nod from the Arch-Governor, though he doesn't even care enough to watch, as, like my father, Io is hanged.
Live for more, she mouths to me.
She reaches into a pocket and pulls out the Haemanthus I gave her. It is smashed and flat. Then loudly she screams to all those gathered, Break the chains! The trapdoor beneath her feet opens. She falls, and for one moment her hair hangs suspended about her head, a flourish of red. Then her feet scramble at air, and she falls. Her slim throat gags, eyes open so wide. If only I could save her from this. If only I could protect her. But the world is cold and hard to me. It does not bend as I wish it to bend. I am weak. I watch my wife die, and my Haemanthus fall from her hand. The camera records it all. I rush forward to kiss her ankle. I cradle her legs. I will not let her suffer. On Mars, there is not much gravity, so you have to pull the feet to break the neck. They let the loved ones do it. Soon, there is no sound, not even the creaking of the rope. My wife is too light. She was only just a girl. Then the thumping of the fading dirge begins. Fists on chests, thousands, fast like a racing heartbeat. Slower, a beat a second, a beat every 5, every 10. Then never again, and the mournful mass fades away like dust held in the palm as the old tunnels wail with deep winds. And the golds, they fly away. Io's father, Lauren, and Kieran sit by my door through the night. They say they are there to keep me company, but they are there to guard me, to ensure I do not die. I want to die. Mother dresses my wound with silk my sister Leanna stole from the webbery. Keep the nerve nucleic dry, or you will scar. What are scars? How little they matter. Io will not see them, so why should I care? She will not run her hand along my back. She will never kiss my wounds. She is gone. I lie in our bed on my back so I can feel the pain and forget my wife. But I cannot forget. She hangs, even now. In the morning, I will pass her on the way to the mines. Soon she will stink and soon she will rot. My beautiful wife shone too bright to live long. I still feel her neck cracking against my hands. They tremble now in the night. There is a hidden tunnel I carved in my bedroom long ago in the rock so I could sneak out as a child. I use it now. I leave out the secret path, climbing stealthily down from my home so my kin never see me slip away in the low light. It is quiet in the township. Quiet except for the HC, which makes my wife die to a soundtrack. They intended to show the futility of disobedience, and they succeed in that. But there is something else in the video. They show my flogging, and Io's, and they play her song throughout. And as she dies, they play it again, which seems to give the video the wrong effect. Even if she were not my wife, I see a martyr. A young girl's pretty song, silenced by the rope of cruel men. Then the HC flashes black for several moments. It has never gone to black before. And Octavia O'Loon comes back on with the same old message. It almost seems as though someone has hacked into the broadcast, because my wife flickers onto the giant screen again. "Break the chains!" she cries. And she's gone, and the screen is black. It crackles. The image comes back. She cries it again. Black once more. Standard programming goes up, then it cuts to her screaming one last time, and then there's me pulling her legs. Then static. The streets are quiet as I make my way to the common. The night shift will be returning soon. Then I hear a noise, and a man steps into the street in front of me. My uncle's face leers at me from the shadows. A single bulb hangs over his head, illuminating the flask in his hand and his tattered red shirt. "You are your father's son, little bastard. Stupid and vain." My hands clench. "Come to stop me, uncle." He grunts.
couldn't stop your father from killing his bloody self. And he was a better bloody man than you. More restraint in him.
I step forward.
I don't need your permission. Nay, you little squabber, you don't.
He runs a hand through his hair.
Don't do what you're gonna do, though. It'll break your mother. You might think she didn't know you'd slip out. She did. Told me so. Said you were going to go die like my brother, like your girl.
If mother knew, she would have stopped me.
Nah. She lets us men make our own mistakes. But this ain't what your girl would have wanted.
I point a finger at my uncle.
You don't know a thing. Not a thing about what she wanted.
Io said I wouldn't understand being a martyr. I will show her I do.
Righto, he says with a shrug. I'll walk with you then, since your head is full of rocks.
He chuckles.
We lambdas do love the noose.
He tosses me his flask, and I fall into tentative step beside him.
I tried to talk your father out of his little protest, you know. Told him words and dance mean as much as dust.
Tried squaring up with him.
I squabbed that one up. He laid me down cold.
He throws a slow right.
Comes a time in life when you know a man has his mind set and it's an insult to gainsay.
I drink from his flask and hand it back. The swill tastes strange and thicker than usual.
Strange.
He makes me finish the flask.
Yours set? He asks, tapping his head. Course it is. I forget. I taught you how to dance.
Stubborn as a pit viper. Wasn't that how you put it?
I say quietly, allowing a little smile.
I walk in silence for a moment with my uncle. He puts a hand on my shoulder.
A sob wants to come out of my chest. I swallow it.
She left me, I whisper. Just left me.
Must have had a reason. Not a dumb girl, that one. The tears come as I enter the common.
My uncle takes me in a one-armed hug and kisses the crown of my head. It's all he can offer. He's not a man made for affection.
His face is pale and ghostly. 35 and so old. So tired. A scar twists his upper lip. Grey streaks his thick hair.
Tell them hello for me in the Vale, he says into my ear, his beard coarse against my neck.
Give my brothers a toast and my wife a kiss. Especially Dancer.
Dancer?
You'll know him.
And if you see your Gramp and Gran, tell them we still dance for them. They won't be long alone.
He walks away, then pauses, and without turning says,
Break the chains. Here?
Here.
He leaves me there in the common, with my swaying wife. I know the cameras watch me from the can as I walk up the gallows. It is metal, so the stairs don't creak. She hangs like a doll. Her face is pale as chalk, and her hair shifts slightly as the ventilators rasp above. When the rope has been cut with the sling blade I stole from the mines, I grab its frayed end and lower her down gently. I take my wife in my arms, and together wend our way from the square to the Webbery. A night shift is working their final hours. The women watch in silence as I carry Io to the ventilation duct. There I see Liana, my sister. Tall and quiet like my mother, she watches me with hard eyes, but she does nothing. None of the women do. They will not gossip about where my wife is buried. They will not speak, not even for the chocolate given to spies. Only 5 souls have been buried in 3 generations. Someone always hangs for it. This is the ultimate act of love. Io's silent requiem.
Women begin to cry. And as I pass, they reach to touch Io's face, to touch mine, and help me open the ventilation duct. I drag my wife through the tight metal space, taking her to where we made love beneath the stars, where she told me her plans and I did not listen. I hold her lifeless body, and hope her soul sees me in a place where we were happy. I dig a hole near the base of a tree. My hands, covered with the dirt of our land, are red like her hair as I take her hand and kiss her wedding band. I place the outer bulb of the human